How can we know for sure that Jesus existed? That's what we're going to talk about right now with world-renowned scholar Dr. Paul Meyer, who's a best-selling author and has actually translated Josephus's works. He's translated Eusebius's works. He's a tremendous scholar of all things related to Jesus, the Gospels, and early Christianity, and later Christianity as well. Dr. Meyer, welcome to the program.
Great to be back with you, Jerry.
Now, every once in a while, you'll hear this canard that Jesus supposedly didn't exist. In fact, I think there's even a film out, a documentary or something called The God Who Wasn't There. And the implication of the whole thing is that there never was a Jesus.
Well, it's so pathetic. I tell you what, people who have a little bit of a, shall we say, challenge to their intellect think they can find a shortcut against any debate about Jesus or the church or Christianity by taking this shortcut. Why talk about a person who never even lived, you see? And, you know, at first this sounds to the outsider like, hey, must be an interesting case here. And, of course, this is, quite frankly, the only word for it is garbage. I mean, there's absolutely no truth in their arguments, and the evidence they use is just pathetic. And yet the public seems to gobble this up. For example, this past Christmas, there was a big article written by an Australian named Raphael Lataster, that's it. Raphael Lataster, who wrote a book, There Was No Jesus, There Is No God. Okay, now I don't know if the water's a little bad down in Australia, but they've produced lately some ridiculous theology. I can't help but think of Barbara Thiering some years ago, who claimed that Jesus married Mary Magdalene, but hey, sadly, they didn't get along, so he divorced her and then married Lydia, the seller of purple, instead. You know, on the basis of nothing, and people gobble this kind of junk up. This is what is so pathetic nowadays, Jerry. You know, people aren't using their heads. The low-flying sensationalists are out abroad trying to cast their ridiculous opinions on who Jesus was and or whether he even existed. There's a blog out there called JesusNeverExisted.com, and they will use arguments. What I find amazing, by the way, is, of course, you know, the loudest mouth around lately has been Bart Ehrman, the chairman of the religion department at University of North Carolina in Chapel Hill. He brags about the fact that he's in the very buckle of the Bible Belt. But he at least came across with the book and said Jesus did exist. Isn't that nice of him? I mean, you know, in terms of the solid evidence and using every aspect of historical methodology, there is no question whatever that there was a historical figure named Jesus of Nazareth. He shows up in all four Gospels. If you don't like the Bible, put it aside. Go to Tacitus, the Roman historian of the first century. He says that in the year 64, the great fire of Rome happened, and Nero got blamed for the fire. It happened on his watch. And then carefully he tells us that to save himself, Nero blamed the Christians. And he describes who they are. They're named for a Christ who was crucified by one of our governors, Pontius Pilate. And the pernicious sect was almost eradicated until suddenly it gained new vigor. There, Jerry, by the way, is an outside testimony to Easter and Pentecost, isn't it?
The new vigor being the resurrection or the Pentecost, the Holy Spirit,
or
both.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
And suddenly gained new vigor and even flowed as far away as Rome, that common cesspool into which things hateful come from all over the Mediterranean world. Okay, so we have a hostile source here, right? Doesn't like the Christians. There's so much sewage.
Tacitus.
Nevertheless, in historical terms, the very fact that in a hostile source you have this positive testimony that Jesus did exist is overpowering evidence. This means that 2,000 years later, whatever a negative side concedes positively, which embarrasses it, that's what it's called, the criterion of embarrassment, that this then is categorically true 20 centuries later. So here you have a pagan author who is obviously telling us there was a historical Jesus. Then there's Suetonius, another Roman author, who gives us lives of the 12 Caesars. He says that in the region 14 in Rome under Claudius, there was a riot over the claims of Christ. Then you got Pliny the Younger writing as the Emperor Trajan. What do I do about these Christians, he says. They get up early Sunday morning and they sing hymns to Christ as if he were a god. They're against the law, okay? And we have Trajan's answer. Yes, dear Pliny, they're against the law, so I suppose. Listen to the weasel warning. And so if you can make a perfect case against them, I suppose the law has to be followed. How do you like that for weasel warning?
Well, it probably meant a lot of relief for a lot of Christians at the time, I'm sure.
Yeah, right, exactly. See, the Roman Empire is moderating there. But don't take any unsigned accusations, the emperor writes. Again, you have here in secular testimony no question about Jesus. Okay, if that isn't enough, let's switch to the Jewish rabbinical traditions.
Okay.
They have traditions on Yeshua HaNotzri, Jesus of Nazareth, and they're negative also, but nevertheless, he existed. And of course, my favorite source, as I need not tell you, is
Josephus. But wait, before you get to Josephus, can you go ahead and talk about that wanted notice for Yeshua HaNotzri that you put in your book, In the Fullness of Time, which came from the Jews at the time Jesus was alive?
Just about, yeah. Indeed, not just about. It was exactly the case. It comes from the Mishnah section of the Talmud, which is the earliest and most authoritative section of the Talmud.
And what exactly is the Talmud, for those not...
Yeah, a collection of Jewish sacred writings, about 70 different volumes.
Okay, oh, wow.
Total collection of their writings. Okay, and the rabbinical commentary. And in the earliest section, the Mishnah, it's called, you have the reference in Sanhedrin. The tractate's called Sanhedrin 43a, which is the arrest notice for Yeshua HaNotzri, that is Joshua of Nazareth, Jesus of Nazareth. And it goes like this: he shall be stoned because he's practiced sorcery and lured Israel to apostasy. If anyone can say anything in his favor, let him declare it to the great Sanhedrin in Jerusalem. Well, here you have another hostile source admitting that this character lived. Hello. And interesting, Jerry, you have in this latter reference, you have the claim that he's practiced sorcery. And I love it. Here you have, again, positive testimony to the supernatural in a hostile context, a negative context, which again satisfies the historical criterion of authenticity, namely the criterion of embarrassment. See, again, when you're arguing from Alpha to Omega, but on the way there, you have to concede evidence. It doesn't help your case. In fact, hurts it, but wrap a cocoon around it, try to explain it away, but nevertheless, what you concede in that opposite context, then 2,000 years later, you know it's true.
So this embarrassment thing that you're talking about. And by the way, along those lines, you mentioned sorcery is said in that that notice number 43A. Sorcery?
Sure.
What does that mean?
Well, that's a negative miracle. In other words, sorcery is something extraordinary or supernatural with help from below.
Mm.
What's a miracle? Same definition with help from above.
Right.
So,
right.
I mean, this is just kind of neat that this can happen.
So this, they're actually saying Jesus did miracles. And we're talking right now with Dr. Paul Meyer, world-renowned scholar on all things related to Jesus and the Gospels. And he's in high demand, as you can hear by the phone ringing in the other room. Western Michigan University is where he teaches. You've been studying this for decades now, haven't you?
Actually, yes, but over 50 years.
Wow. Okay, you were going to talk about Josephus.
Well, Josephus also mentions Jesus in two different places, very famous place, Antiquities, Book 20, Section 200, where he talks about the execution of Jesus' brother James. But the most important reference was two books earlier in Antiquities, Book 18, Section 63 of his famous Jewish Antiquities. Here, right in the middle of the administration of Pontius Pilate, he has a big paragraph on Jesus, which, of course, we were told in seminary days we couldn't use because it had been interpolated, it had been baptized. That's true.
What does that mean, interpolated?
Well, and that means that some Christian scribe early in the second century already tried to add sweet Christian verses there to show how a believing Jew this Josephus was.
Right.
It goes something like this.
Okay.
About this time there was a man, comma, if indeed we ought to call him only a man, who was the Messiah. He was the Son of God. He rose from the dead after being crucified by Pontius Pilate. In other words, just about a Christian creed. Now, this is something that a Jew could never have written without becoming a Christian,
right,
as indeed Paul of Tarsus was.
Right.
But this was not written by Paul of Tarsus. It's written by a Jew who never converted. So, therefore, we were correctly told in seminary never to use that for defensive purposes. But I was able to get back to a response to Professor Shlomo Pines in Hebrew University of Jerusalem some years ago, in which he discovered a manuscript tradition of Josephus that was not interpolated at that point, and I was very, very impressed with the original version of this. Is a rare uninterpolated section that this Christian scribe never got a hold of. And this is something that Josephus wrote, which is very credible. I do believe it's the original. And in my edition of Josephus, I include this in the text, and it goes something like this. And I think it's a very fair view of who Jesus was by an outside source who didn't necessarily believe in him, but is trying to tell the truth as he saw it. And here's how it goes. About this time, there was a wise man called Jesus, and his conduct was good, and he was known to be virtuous. Many people among the Jews and the other nations, remember that's Gentiles, the Goyim, the Jews and the other nations became his disciples. Pilate condemned him to be crucified and to die. But those who would become his disciples did not abandon their discipleship. They reported that he had come back to life 3 days after he was crucified. See, they reported. The original version that was baptized said he rose from the dead. No, they reported that he rose from the dead. That is something clearly that objectifies it.
Yeah.
That's something that a Jew could have written without converting to Christianity. But then he very fairly goes on to say, accordingly, he could possibly have been the Messiah.
He could possibly have been?
Yeah, that's what he writes.
Okay.
Accordingly, he could possibly have been the Messiah, concerning whom the prophets have reported wonders, and the tribe of the Christians named after him has not disappeared to the present day. Now, this goes right smack dab in the text again where it belongs, because this is utterly convincing. It bore out beautifully what Dr. Paul Winter had predicted could happen. He's a scholar living in London with whom I corresponded way back in the 1960s, asking him about the passage and his opinion on it. And he, even at that time, prized away the Christian passages that he thought were interpolated, and his version reads almost word for word like this thing discovered by Professor Shlomo Pines in the Hebrew University. So I tell you, Jerry, it's a thrilling time to be alive. There are so many new manuscript finds. There are so many new archaeological important pieces of evidence that are adding more and more detail to our knowledge of Jesus and the times that are in the first century. I've often said it's a thrilling time to be alive for Christians, because just as the crazy attacks are mounting on our faith, as you well know, it seems that God is right there providing additional ammunition by the month in terms of the great finds being discovered over there.
Well, it seems like only the negative things are, you know, touted, and then later on, you know, if you do some digging, you find out, well, that didn't turn out to be the way they claimed it was. By the way, Josephus was writing about what time, what decade, roughly, in the first century?
His first book was The Jewish War, when he talked about the Great War with Rome. That was in the late 80s. And then he published his Great Antiquities, 20 books of Jewish antiquities, about the year 97 A.D.
Okay, so around... Okay, so let me ask you this. What if somebody says, oh, wait a minute now, some of these sources you're talking about, they're 60, 70, 80 years removed from Jesus. How do we know they didn't add something to it?
Uh-huh. Good question. As a matter of fact, I just reviewed a terrible book by by a Notre Dame professor claiming the persecutions never happened, or they were Candida Moss, her name is.
Yeah, I heard about
and,
that.
And she claims that Tacitus was writing, that Josephus was writing in 97 and Tacitus 50 years later. How could they ever know the truth? Okay, you know what the parallel would be? Can anybody today write about the Kennedy administration? Come on. You see, this argument is worthless 50 years ago.
Yeah, but isn't it certainly true, too, when it comes to antiquity, that a gap of what you're seeing with, let's say, the writing even of the New Testament or even with the secular authors about Jesus don't take a 21st century, you know, criterion, if you will, and impose that on the first century. A gap of 50 to 100 years is virtually nothing in antiquity.
And nothing in today either. In other words, can people write authoritatively about the Kennedy administration? I think so. People are still alive.
Well, that's true.
If we were in the Kennedy administration, they'd have been alive in the ancient world also.
That's true, but it's an interesting point. But I want to, you know, I think some people are overly skeptical to the point where, frankly, as I've heard this before, that if you were to apply the same kind of criterion towards secular history of antiquity as is often imposed on Jesus and Christianity, you'd have to throw everything out, basically. Everything.
Well, what they're applying are ridiculous criteria.
Yeah.
Remember the Jesus seminar?
Yeah.
If it's very different, it must be Jesus, but then if it's too different, it can't be Jesus. You know, this kind of thing. I mean, it's just so stupid.
Yeah. All right, how about a concluding thought from Dr. Paul Meyer?
Well, I just think that the ridiculous attacks being made on Christ and Christianity by these sensationalists are just a case of why newspapers have to report murders and mayhem and rape and whatever else, sensational stuff, rather than affirmative material. And this is exactly what's happening today, and it's a shame. And people ought not be misled. I'm not worried about Christians. I'm worried about those who are marketing, who are shopping for a faith, who then may be turned off by a book of lies like The Da Vinci Code by Dan Brown or other sensationalist materials. It's pathetic. I would simply say use your head, check the evidence, and you will see that the overpowering amount of solid, historically approved evidence falls in favor of the New Testament.
Excellent. Dr. Paul Meyer, thank you. Always a pleasure.
Good to talk to you, Jerry.
All right, you too. God bless. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.